What's up, Dialed fam? Welcome to episode 158 of the Dialed Health Podcast. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and head coach of DialedHealth.com, which is strength training for cyclists. And on today's episode, I get to sit down with Allison Jackson, who is a professional cyclist riding for EF Education TIBCO SVB. She is the Canadian national champion, a former Olympian, and the winner of Paris-Roubaix Femmes this year, who absolutely exploded the media when she crossed the line at first and immediately broke out into a dance. In fact, it was one of the best things I've seen all year in cycling. So to have the opportunity to ask her what's going on in her head that would lead to incorporating so much fun into such a serious sport is something that I'm really grateful to have had done. And I think that she answers it very clearly for you guys. And when you hear what her life motto is, it's going to stick with you. I'm not going to ruin it now, but when you hear it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And throughout this episode, we get into some details about her actual training itself. We do talk about her warm-ups before races and how that whole operation looks. But you will notice this episode is a little bit shorter than normal, and that is for a few specific reasons, which we'll touch on after the episode as I bring you guys up to speed on weekly thoughts. What's going on in my head? What's going on with the business? And a really bad habit that I've identified within myself that I've always seen as a positive thing, and I realized it's actually not. I think it's holding me back. So hopefully you can learn from me, and this episode with Allison is an all-around boost to your mental health and well-being this week. And if that's true for you, please make sure that you leave a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on. You can also screenshot that you're listening to this episode and post it to your Instagram story. Please be sure to tag myself and Allison. I'll have a link to her Instagram in the description, and that way we'll both have an opportunity to repost it. Now, without further ado, let's dive into this episode with Allison Jackson. Can you tell me how you basically started on a bison farm in Canada, got into triathlon in the first place, and worked your way to winning Paris-Roubaix Femmes?
Yeah, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like after high school, I sort of had like 3 kind of dreams. So at the time I just did like an intern program that was like outdoor guiding program at a Christian college out in BC. And then I just like loved hiking mountains and rock climbing and sailing and all the things, but came back one summer. And then there was a bike in the garage, and it was someone who had worked on my parents' farm. Had left a bike, and it's just like I say a Canadian Tire bike, but really it's like a Walmart bike or, you know, any kind of like real cheap sort of bike. But then I was like, I want to ride this to town. So I was riding it to my little coffee shop job, but I was also swimming all the time in the mornings because my dream was to learn how to surf. And if the opportunity ever came, I just wanted to make sure that I wouldn't drown, that I'd be such a good swimmer that I could session the surfing all day so that if the one opportunity comes, I would be able to surf. And then I had done this hike in the Himalayas in India, and it's like, yeah, super high elevation. So we had been doing some like run training for that. So I was kind of doing these 3 things. And then someone in my town was like, oh, are you training for a triathlon? And I was like, a what? Like, what is that? But they had like a little group at that time. There's this Ironman athlete in the town who took a couple of kids, taught them basically about transitions. And then I went to a race with them. He let me use his proper road bike, not my little Canadian Tire special. And then, I qualified for Worlds, for like amateur Worlds or whatever. And so then I was like, oh, well, and then this is where like my life philosophy, which is like do well with what you have right now. So then I just like take stock of like what's happening in my life at the moment. And it was like, well, I have a little bit of talent for this. I also like by winning some races in the summer, had won like a wetsuit and running shoes and other things that like, help you with the sport. So then I just thought, okay, I'm just going to dig into these things, and it's like also not worry that like I'm 19 at the time that like, oh, maybe this is like too late to start or any of those kind of like barriers. It was just, okay, what do I have right now? I'm going to dive into those things. Also being a student. So then this time I started studying kinesiology actually at university. Then, you know, like coaching can be quite expensive for triathlon or any of these kind of like niche sports. So I had a coach for a little bit of time, but basically he was just like, well, join a swim team, join a cycling club, join a run team. But the swim and the run team I linked up with had a whole bunch of university athletes there. And I was like, oh, this is great. The next week they all show up with the same jackets because they were all from a university program that had just started and they had sent their athletes to train with the coach that I had chosen. But then they let me ride the bus with them to this cross country race and I won. And so then the scholarship offer came in. So then I, yeah, went to Trinity Western University and then really became like a great runner. The coach, yeah, was just like, he's a great coach. And yeah, won like the 3K Canada West Championship, for my last 2 years when I was there. But the first year I got lapped in that race. So it was like, you really come from like, yeah, losing. And then just like working hard or, and then, yeah, really becoming a runner. Anyway, I then, yeah, always when I was with the runners, I just wanted to be a runner. And when I was with the cyclists, all these guys kept, trying to get me to race. So at the end of my university, I just wanted to be a pro athlete. And then, yeah, I wanted to be a pro athlete and I also had the Olympic dream. And triathlon, my swim was just never good enough to make the Olympics. So then I kind of was looking at running or cycling, like, could I, have Olympic qualifying times or, how does that work? I've never done just one sport. I was always busy doing all the triathlon training. But I went to BC Super Week, which was a bunch of crit racing out in Vancouver and won a bunch of the races. And so then someone said, oh, like, teams will be calling you. And I was like, okay. So I sat on my couch, which is so funny when I think of it now, because in cycling, you send out resumes, like you make an effort, you make connections. But thankfully, like other people were looking out for me. And I did get a call. And then I was like, okay, this is, I'm going to try. And then it was another, like, do well with what you have right now. So, okay, I've got this contract offer. I'm gonna just go all in cycling and see what happens. And then the short story is, when there was an opportunity to win, I did. And then I was given more opportunities to win, and I did. And then, yeah, that's really how the flow of my career has been all the way up the ranks in cycling.
It's incredible. Do well with what you have right now. It's almost a better said version of my start moving forward because it's less vague, and it is exactly it is all that you can do, right? No matter whether it's athletics or whether it's your career or being with your family or any type of situation that you're in, you have to do the best you can with what you're given at this moment. That's incredible. I'm definitely going to use that in the future.
Nice. I think it also like it really allows me to stay positive because I think a lot of times we can see the barriers maybe or like, oh, it's not going to work out because, or for me, like I signed my first cycling contract when I was 25 in the European sort of cycling scene. That's really old. So you could look at these like different barriers or like, oh, and sometimes those seem insurmountable. But I think when you say, do well with what you have right now, then it allows you, yeah, to have an action plan. And I think that's also, start moving forward. It allows you to look at something and say, I'm going to lean into that. I'm going to, work on this part. And the other stuff that you can't control, you just leave it. And then the keeping the positive headspace, you get to see the opportunities that you have, not the barriers. And I think that's, yeah, a beautiful mindset, a beautiful way to live.
And
Yeah.
you displayed that in your race at Paris-Roubaix as well, because when you guys had established a breakaway, there was a very small gap for a very long time. And you were basically cheering everybody on, like, hey, this is our opportunity. This is what we have right now. And if we work together, one of us can win. If we don't actually
Yeah.
seize this moment right now, which is maybe I'm getting too cliche with the Carpe Diem stuff, but if we don't do this, we're not going to, none of us are going to have the victory that we're all looking for, or the odds are going to get even slimmer. So I think
Yeah.
it's amazing you say that because we have video documentation of you living it out under a crazy stressful situation. And that's basically what allowed you to get into the position where you had the most savage sprint toward the line and won Paris Roubaix. And I think there's incredible documentation of that through videos from your team. I'll definitely link a couple in the description so that people can go and watch that. But I am really curious about some more specifics with your performance because obviously your mindset is there. And so I want to know what the physical is doing. Now, before Paris-Roubaix, or let's just say any insane one-day race, what was your warm-up or what is your warm-up like to get your body ready for a day like that?
Yeah, I mean, in cycling, because we have such like a long neutral, or usually we have a neutral, so you can kind of warm up in that space. Really, you have to look at like what the course is like. If it's a really like going to be a hectic fast start, or your job is really at the beginning of the race, then maybe you get on the rollers, do a little bit before getting in into the race. Any activation stuff I usually won't do so much on race day. I'll do day before, and that'll be like some core things. And part of that is just like we travel together as a team on the bus, and I just focus on kind of like the race tactic mindset. But also we're always back of the bus, playing the music, having a dance party, keeping like I guess, yeah, the good times going. But I think more so it's like when I feel like I'll say like jazzy. But like when you feel like a little bit like spicy, like then I feel like you're ready to sort of like attack or react to the moments of the race. When you kind of like get nervous or have a bit of maybe it's like race fear, then you'll hesitate. And when you're a bike racer, is yeah, I perform better when I kind of have that spiciness or that attack mindset. So yeah, that's kind of the morning day of
That's
pre-race routine.
perfect. So you basically counteract any potential nerves or anxiety that a race could bring to anybody by getting quote unquote spicy, which is just starting to move your body, turn on some music. And it's funny because you are physically moving, which obviously helps your mental get somewhere as well. I mean, our physical affects our mental so much. But bringing the fun component and doing it in a way that you enjoy that brings good energy to everyone around you, it does seem like the perfect scenario. Like, I'll be honest, I don't see myself turning on music and dancing before a race, but the fact that you do and you can is probably the one of the biggest advantages that you have. And I think that's really rad. And again, we have video documentation of this. We see it. And really, if you're in a quarter squat, legs are moving in and out, torso is rotating, arms are up in the air like half of your dance moves, then that's a pretty good warm up. I think from a from a physiology standpoint, we're getting hips, we're getting core, you're breathing, you're moving, you're smiling. It's about as good as a warm up could be. So it's really not far off probably what a perfect training plan would look like.
It's so funny to like break it down and not physiology, but the angles of movement thrown shapes, but it sounds so funny.
Well, not to almost make more out of it than it is, but if you really think about it, it's like, oh gosh, this is actually not that different than a stretch you would give somebody if you're doing a dynamic warm-up or some leg swings or some I mean swimmers are really known for doing a ton of arm swinging variations before they jump in the pool and everything. So yeah, it's not far off. I think it's a good idea.
Well, it's yeah, funny with the coach that I work with. So a lot of times, right, we will have like, either core or body weight stuff like set into the program, or yoga or some other things. 'Cause I think like as cyclists, we're so linear in our movement that it's really good to just do something on a different plane, that creates like body balance. But I have always been doing things on different planes. So, but I used to do a little bit yoga more often, and now it really just is like a ton of dance, or whether it's even like actual dance classes, or just like making up my own things or whatever. Or just like trying to learn, yeah, TikToks or like choreography that's just like on YouTube or music videos before or whatever. But now my coach, it'll be less like, sometimes it's less structured of like do this like core or whatever, and it'll just be like practice TikToks, or on Training Peaks we have this like pie of like how much percentage is for like cycling and how much is for strength work, and we have one that's like TikTok,
That's
which is more a little bit more of like a joking way to do it, but yeah, I think like I mean also maybe knock on wood or whatever, but like I'm rarely injured, or I've never really had like a chronic injury, or even like I come out of crashes and I'm like pretty good. And I think part of it, I'm gonna knock it up to being a farm kid, and you're just like tough,
Yeah.
resilient, or you've got good bones, or also, I didn't start cycling until later, so I think I've got some really good bone density from other like movements before then. But then I think it's also just like I'm really limber. I mean, from doing dance or gymnastics as a background, I don't have all this like tightness that, if you crash and your arm kind of goes in a weird way, well, my arm has been going in that weird way in a dance move, the day before. So I think, yeah, I just have to attribute sort of like this like holistic body, movement stuff to just, yeah, being, free from injury.
It's something that's hard to quantify, but it is so real when you start looking at things a little bit closer from impact and your resilience toward that. Once you have better bone density or better mobility, if you're ever tumbling, just from the different planes of motion you mentioned with your tendons, your ligaments, your joints, all of that can be built off of the bike. And to be honest, it's really hard to do on the bike as well. And so having that balance, it does make you longer term more resilient, kind of like you described even in other interviews. I think the later start to cycling is interesting to think about. It's almost like you have less time in that single plane of motion, so maybe that's an advantage at this point. But you've been riding for, well over 10 years at a high level at this point. So I think that your base of being a well-rounded human and athlete has probably served you, but I think what's more important is that you continue to do it even against a lot of the dogma that's out there, which is just like, just ride more or whatever. And you've also said that you do enjoy the hecticness of racing, which I thought was pretty rad and probably pretty necessary. Can you give me an example of what a hectic moment would be in the Peloton, or maybe one of the more hectic moments you've had out there while racing?
Yeah, I love saying like embrace the chaos. Like I love the chaos, and actually some like former teammates and other and current teammates like will laugh at me or joke at me about creating chaos in the Peloton. Or if there is no chaos, then sometimes I create it, and whether that's like just kind of being joking with others, like bumping into them or whatever. It's just like I think that's just like when I say you got to create this like spicy attitude. It just that's I just love it. It sort of like gives me a giggle, a little bit of a laugh. But I mean, when you're coming into any sort of positioning moment in a European bike race where it's like you're with 180 riders and you're going into a corner that only or it's going to be single file, or like we're all fighting to get into this position, well then people are fighting, so there's a bit of desperation that you got to be there. You're going faster because now you're trying to race each other to get to this corner, so like the risk gets higher, the risk involved of like crashing, or it feels more dangerous even. But I love it. I think like when I start feeling those feelings, I just keep rising to that level basically. And I think that's also why I was successful when I came straight into European racing, is because I didn't know the courses like the Europeans just like know like at the back of their hand. I just could feel the energy rising in the group, and I would just match it. So if they're getting more intense and fighting a little bit more, getting a little closer to you, I'm gonna race that level. I'm gonna fight back in that same with that same energy. And then I think like sometimes it's also like, you're maybe it's like descending and you're going pretty fast, and you're like, well, this is either gonna be totally awesome or really bad. And most of the time I get totally awesome. And then after you get through that moment, then you're like, then I think the adrenaline and the feeling of that, it just like, I love that. So, or all these like near misses of, near miss crash or whatever, then
Yeah.
it just like creates a great story and I love it. I thrive off of that. So, and I think also most of the time in my life, I've gotten, this is totally awesome, not this is really bad. So that just like encourages me to keep living in those chaotic moments or embracing those chaos, the headache, hectic parts. So yeah.
The near misses, that feeling of a front tire maybe losing traction and then regaining traction real quick and it slips a couple inches, like even that can be the most exhilarating thing and you feel like a hero for walking away from it.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
can't imagine having those moments and then going on to win a major race. It's probably got to be this compounding ball of just dopamine that just hits you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, when you won Paris-Roubaix, I think the shots I love the most are just your face of like you're not saying any words, but your mouth is open, your hands are up by your face, and there's this pure disbelief. It's like you're looking around at everybody like, is this happening right now? And so,
It's
yeah.
funny because like in that moment, so I'll say like I'm not necessarily surprised, or like can't believe it, but it's also just this feel, it's almost like locking in that feeling that I actually did it. Because I think so many times
Yeah.
in that we recon that velodrome and I dream about what it would be like to win. So then now it's not a dream anymore. This is real life. This is actually happening to me. And it's so hard to win a bike race. In my 8-year career of being a professional, every year I try to win these races, and every year I go into the races believing that I can win, because that's how you have to enter a bike race. And but then to actually do it, to nail it down, to finish across the line, it's not a dream anymore, it's actually happened. And then to be able to like soak that in, that it's mine. Yeah, wow.
It's incredible. I mean, it gives me goosebumps to think about because you are, in a way, already living out your dream of being a professional athlete before that point. And there's been wins up to that point. But there's something about that instant satisfaction of the achievement being, of that thing being achieved that you get with athletics that you don't really get in many other areas of life or business. Like, I think when I equate it to business, it's like, okay, you finally have some crazy acquisition or buyout date, and then the money hits your account, or I don't know what it would be, or you get that client or whatever. Like, there are those moments, but there's almost nothing more clear and tangible than just a pure victory. And yeah, I think that's what's so special about athletics and also knowing the highs and lows that come along with it, because so many times before that, other things can happen that you have to fight through mentally to know that the achievements are still possible. And you do such a great job with balancing, the fun and the serious side of cycling in general. And I've heard you say that, it's people can think that you're maybe not taking it seriously because you look like you're having so much fun, but when it's time to perform and train, it's time to perform and train. And so do you have any tips for anyone before we wrap this up on maybe how they can implement that themselves?
Yeah, that's also been an interesting one to maybe convince like teammates or team directors that I'm really taking this seriously,
Yeah.
or even sometimes like, I mean, I've always been like this, to hold sort of this balance of like really fun and then really take something seriously. And I think like I do really want to be a high achiever. So, and I really love winning or being the best. But yeah, to be able to, I think it, for me, the balance is really important, to be able to have fun, not take myself so seriously, and also not allow the pressure of achieving to be on me. And also, like in the end, like there's always going to be winners and losers, and it's okay to be either. And even though the goal is always to win, and we have to enter into the race or whatever we're doing with that in mind, but in the journey, we have to just allow, right? We have to, take each moment and make the right choices in each of those things to hopefully lead us up to that win. And if we don't get it, it's also okay. We're gonna be okay. Like we put a good foot forward and whatever. And I think by keeping the fun in it help, I guess, like it also reminds me that winning isn't everything, and so I think it allows me to have that balance, also enjoy the chaos, enjoy the fight, enjoy even like maybe the buzz, the fun moments, that all kind of leads up in that journey.
If you thought that conversation ended abruptly, you are not wrong. The video completely cut out as we were recording it, but praise the Lord, it saved, and we were able to bring you guys that conversation because we covered everything I was really hoping to. And I just want to wish Allison best of luck as she goes into the Tour de France this upcoming weekend. And hopefully, we'll have an opportunity to do some more content together in the future because she is so rad and so inspiring. So just cool. It was like another person to have on this podcast that makes what I'm doing actually feel surreal. And I actually wanted to get into some upcoming projects and not necessarily details, but to let you guys know why this podcast was a little bit short, besides the fact that it cut out on us, but also what I'm aiming at for the future and how it has exposed a bad habit that I have. So maybe let's just talk about the bad habit and then we'll get into what we're actually doing. My bad habit that almost seems good, that I thought was good up until it was kind of revealed to me this week that it isn't, is that when I get clarity on a new path or a new goal, I start to get very impatient and I start forcing things and cramming things and essentially just wanting it done yesterday. It's like the clarity brings this desire to have it done now and immediately. And what's crazy is that I've gained enough relationships and resources to put things into play quickly, but I've also done it to an extent that is unmanageable and actually not realistic or not sustainable. And it creates a lot of anxiety that does not need to be there. And it's simply because I'm rushing. Now, the positive side of this in the past has been the urgency. It's the urgency to get things done. A lot of people want to know how to be motivated, have that feeling of urgency when it comes to work, because it is so valuable. Like, especially running your own business, there's always a million things to do. You're always deciding what to do and when, what's the most important. And ultimately, it's up to you how much you kind of get done, especially in a sole proprietor role like I'm in now. Our team is basically myself, it's freelance media people that I work with, and the web team, and also trainers that I collaborate with, like Josh. But it's a very lean operation. So to have a sense of urgency is very important. But again, you can drive yourself crazy trying to get an unrealistic amount of things done. I mean, I'll tell you guys the amount of times I build a to-do list on a day and I get halfway through it and I'm like, there's no chance. Like, even if everything went perfectly right and a little ahead of schedule, I still wouldn't have gotten this crazy list done that I prepared for myself. And you always feel like you fall short. And that's where the anxiety comes up. That's where you're looking at the clock more. And I was like, whoa, dude, I gotta pump the brakes on this a little bit. Like, I gotta breathe. This is why I have that breathe tattooed on my neck, is because it's the biggest resolve or it's the most, I guess, acute resolve I have for anxiety when I'm feeling it. If I am feeling anxiety and I can't put my finger on why, I gotta start by taking a deep breath, looking around, kind of getting some different perspective. And it really makes a big difference. So the other morning, I woke up with this underlying feeling of anxiety that I couldn't put my finger on. And for me, resolving it oftentimes, especially early in the morning, that's when I'm reading my Bible. It has a lot of prayer involved. So, and actually a quiet household. So if my brain can actually work, I can actually think without screaming kids, like stepping on each other's faces. And so that always helps, But I'm sitting there and I'm like, God, you got to reveal to me why I'm feeling this way. And I felt like pretty clearly I got an answer that just said, dude, you're rushing. You have all of these great things going on. You have all this clarity on your path and direction like you've been asking for. And now that you have it, you're actually trying to accomplish it too quick. Like, you're going to make mistakes. You're already overpromising on certain things. And that, all those things is what is creating the anxiety for you. So You just have to reel it in. You're on the right track. Your heart's in the right place. You are making moves. It's not like you're just sitting, you know, on your hands, not doing anything. But you have to be a little bit more patient. And with that patience is going to come a little bit more precision. And I think you're going to execute what you want to do even better. And I feel like that all kind of just hit me. And I was like, man, I do need to remember that. And it's funny because I just read a book all about this. It was The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And in that book, it's funny because you have these influences. Sometimes they can swing the pendulum a little too far one direction. Like I'll tell you after reading that book, although I feel like it really helped me analyze any anxiety I'm feeling or this sense of rushing that I have, it almost chilled me out a little bit too much. You know, you can't, I don't want to be too chill. That, I mean, that's just me at this point, dude. I'm 32. I have a young family. I have a lot of career ambitions. Your boy can't be chilling. I got here. I don't even want to use my time for too much of that. In fact, anytime I get a real opportunity to chill, like 2 hours in, I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's go do something. And thankfully I have that energy in me. I'm grateful for that. But yeah, so that is the bad habit I have. It's getting clarity and then wanting to rush. So I'm going to be working on that. But with that said, we do have some really exciting content things going on that I'm going to do my best to be precise and execute well without rushing. I have some help on the media side, which I'm very excited about. And hopefully we can get some brand partnerships to support what we're doing so that this can become a real thing. But the goal is going to be to have more content that is a 360 approach to all the platforms so that things are cohesive and make a lot more sense. And not only make more sense for the consumer and the member, the client, the customer, whatever you want to talk about or however you want to present that, but have it be more impactful. Like you want to squeeze more out of content that you're doing. So for an example, I have a goal to start meeting up with some athletes and to, I'll give you guys some details. If you're this far in the podcast, you deserve to hear some details. And I guess you're just going to find out whether I executed or not. But this is me giving you a disclaimer because I'm not trying to overpromise right now, but I'm just going to give you an example of what I want to do. Cameron Haynes is this guy in the hunting community who is known for ultra running and all sorts of really badass content. He has this series called Lift, Run, Shoot, where he meets up with someone like Nick Bear, for example, who owns Bear Performance Nutrition. This is how I saw the series. I am a partner with Bear Performance Nutrition. So he meets up with Cam Haynes. They do a 22-mile trail run. They go and shoot a bow. He gets a new bow. They record a podcast, and then they have a strength training session. And it was rad. And I was like, oh my gosh, dude, I could do that. I could go do that with people. How perfect would that be for not only Dialed Health, but for just good content in general, for me to go meet up with an athlete, have them take me on a ride and maybe whoop up on me a little bit, most likely. And then me take them through a strength training session, teach them some stuff, whoop up on them a little bit. And then we record a podcast about the day. And then we do a collaboration post for Instagram. And we also have a YouTube video that documents everything that we did, which then points to the podcast, which then we could pump through our newsletter and actually save as a blog post on the website. I mean, as I say it, it sounds so obvious and clear. And I'm sure it makes sense to you, but those things are hard to execute. And they take a lot of people who know what they're doing. And ultimately, they take a lot of money, a lot of organization, planning, time, prep. Like these are all weaknesses of mine that I've had in the past because I've really been just shooting at the hip for so long. You know, even like the Double Everest, biggest project I've ever done. Shooting at the hip is an understatement for that. We planned it far in advance, but funding, logistics, premiere, timing, all those things, shooting from the hip. Absolutely. I'm still like kind of worn out from that whole process of it. So I want to do it in a way that is sustainable, that can be a regular project and a regular thing for me. And thankfully, this week, I should have the opportunity to actually execute it with somebody. In fact, tomorrow, I will be leaving to go do this, or the day that you're listening to this. So stay tuned for any updates on that. You'll know whether or not it's happening very soon. And I think even if it doesn't get executed this weekend, because I don't know, I don't ever want to get my hopes up, this is something I'm going to be shooting for in the very near future. And I do have some partners on board that are interested in supporting it. So just going to get the ball rolling with that and hopefully open up more content on Instagram, more variety for everyone. I'm already starting different styles of posts. Again, just to get the amount of information out to you guys that I want to, because I don't want to be boxed in by certain parameters. It's all got to be on brand. It's all going to support you, but I want to have more layers to what I'm doing, and I want to have all these angles of content support each other. But with that said, I do feel like I have some clarity on other types of YouTube content as well. In fact, there's a video I made called Should Cyclists Take Creatine? And the format of that video is essentially me talking to the camera, presenting some evidence about creatine, my own experience with it. It has some B-roll. It's short, it's concise, it's informative, and it's been great because I've been able to send that to people who asked me about creatine, and the performance of it actually did pretty well for me on YouTube. So I think that type of format is something that I could plug that could also support the business. Like if I were to, you know, do Should Cyclists XYZ, I could have all these topics that not only could be good for content in the moment, but that I could use to send to people in the future, that could become blog posts, that could become newsletters, and have this full integration that supports not only the business, but really supports the member. And again, you're squeezing more out of the one piece of content, but it takes a lot of organization. You know, if you're going to do it that way, you can't be late or behind on the project. You know what I mean? Like you have to be planned enough to have it ready at least a few, like a couple weeks out. Like, I don't know. I wish you guys knew like how quickly I will turn things around for the sake of consistency. And again, that has served me. I don't think I do a bad job. Like, I've had some very successful things social media wise. So I'm not saying it's all what I'm doing is bad, but I do want to evolve it and take it to the next level. And I think everything that I'm talking about now is how that's going to happen. I think that is kind of the clearer path. So again, the clarity's there. I want to execute it, but I'm going to take my time. And I think the last thing I'll say to add on to this for you guys to know what I'm working on is the one-on-one coaching option. So this is another thing of me really embracing the coaching side opposed to the platform side of the brand. You know, I'm going to continue to develop the content on dialedhealth.com. We're going to continue to simplify the app, but we're not going to pour resources into the app to try and make it competitive with other fitness apps out there that are just focused on the platform itself. I've talked about that on a few other podcasts, but hopefully that makes sense. I hope no one ever gets the assumption that I'm not trying to make the online product the best it can be, because that's not the case at all. It's just a slightly different direction of build the focus on the platform versus the coaching. And I think me focusing just on the coaching is going to be beneficial to everyone, besides the people who want to track 45,000 different metrics that they're never going to look at again in the future. If you're that person, I'll probably have to send you somewhere else. Shots fired. But what I'm talking about with the one-on-one coaching is what I'm doing with my athlete, Lance Hayden. I want my sponsored athlete experience to be available to people at a premium price that I could manage. So a very small amount of people as another coaching option on, I guess, virtually. So that's what I'm working on right now. It's going to be a while because again, it's like you get clarity on what you want, but then to do things well and to execute it, you're like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of layers and steps in between where I'm at now and where I want to be if I want this to be, you know, at the standard that I've at least had the business at so far. So that's pretty much everything that's been on my mind in the last week. And thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks for all the support. You know that if I can do anything for you well, it's provide you strength training programs for cyclists. So go to dialedhealth.com, go integrate them. And it's also the best way you can support me is through that membership there. It's really the thing that drives all that I'm doing at this point. So yeah, it really makes a huge impact. And if you want more content, that's the way to go and support myself and the platform. And thanks to all the current Dialed Fam members. Looking forward to hopefully bringing you some exciting content coming up. And until then, start moving forward.